From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made tomorrow, Election Day, when millions of Americans decide to stay home and not vote. The largest age group that will sit out tomorrow is young voters, age 18 to 29. Now, we're seeing reports of potential record turnout of the youth vote, the so-called youth vote under 30, and yet they will still be the smallest by block. Why is that? Why do so many young adults choose not to get involved with the political process? Climate change impacts all of us, but it will impact young Americans the most, and it would be logical to think that they might vote to help shape climate policy, but mostly they don't, or pick so many other issues that impact all Americans. What motivates people to vote or not vote? Well, this past weekend, campaigning in Georgia, Oprah Winfrey wagged a finger at young voters and told them that if they choose not to vote, they are dishonoring their ancestors who gave so much. They are disrespecting the many who died to grant this right. Is that over the top? Or is there a point about voter apathy? And is shaming appropriate? This hour, we have a studio filled with young voters who are working hard to convince their peers to vote or have very strong opinions themselves about the so-called youth vote. So hello to all of our guests in studio. Iman Abid is the chapter director of the Genesee Valley region of the ACLU. Iman, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Jamal Holtz, vice president of the Students Association of the University of Rochester. Jamal, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Audrey Sample, a volunteer chapter lead for Students Demand Action, the Rochester chapter here. Nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me back.
And Nick Nevinger is an actor, among other things.
I am a person, yes. These nice titles, and I am Nick Nevinger, guy.
Welcome, guy.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. I want to ask all of you how you feel about this question on the responsibility to vote, not just whether it's a privilege or, but more of a responsibility. And let's listen to what Oprah said campaigning for Stacey Abrams in Georgia just this past weekend.
For anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, and you are choosing not to vote wherever you are in this state, in this country, you are dishonoring your family. You are disrespecting and disregarding their legacy, their suffering and their dreams when you don't vote. So honor your legacy, honor your legacy, honor your right to citizenship in this, which is the greatest country in the world.
That's Oprah Winfrey this past weekend. Jamal, too strong, or do you agree with her?
I agree with her. I think it's pointing out our history and what it took to get the right to vote. I'm even talking about things like the 19th Amendment, where women had the right and access to vote. I think it dishonors those who fought for this right, but also it ruins our democracy. And even as a young black male, where my ancestors and fighting through civil rights movement just to get the right for black individuals to vote, it does us a disservice where we're not politically involved, but also we're not practicing our democracy.
Iman, what do you make of what you heard from Oprah there? Too strong, or is it on the money?
No, I don't think it's too strong at all. I think we are just witnessing so much hate and so much negative rhetoric on nearly every single marginalized community, especially African Americans and Latinos right now, that I think what she's saying is explicitly actually addressed to the civil rights movement that the African Americans, African American community has felt and has seen and felt yet again, you know, as under attack as they have ever been throughout American history. And I think it's just time right now to step up, participate in this one civic duty that we have amongst so many other things that we need to be doing. As well as, I think we're also in a position right now, I think where if we're remaining silent, it also means something. Whereas like a few years ago, maybe remaining silent didn't necessarily mean as much as it means now. And so I think participating in democracy to this extent is absolutely crucial at this very moment.
Hmm. Nick?
Well, they're definitely strong words. I wouldn't say that it's my place to say whether or not she's right just because I'm not a young black voter in Georgia. It's not that I agree or disagree. I don't feel like she's talking specifically to me. Obviously, she wants everyone to vote. Just, it's not really for me.
I think that's fair. So let me turn it a different way. Is it okay to shame your peers who are not voting?
Someone who's done it.
Here's Anna Marie Cox, who's a political commentator, a white woman, writing this weekend. I think shaming people into voting is perfectly acceptable. People died fighting for this. As some of you are given to say about such tenderness, blank your feelings. Go vote. That's from Anna Marie Cox.
I personally agree, yeah. I can't imagine not wanting to exercise the right, not wanting to be informed, not caring. And if you don't care, if you don't care enough to be informed, I just feel like it shows a little bit of privilege on your part that you feel like you can live as a person in America without having to exercise your right. I don't get it personally.
Okay. Audrey?
One of the things that stuck with me the most in my time as an activist was a video that I watched of a girl who was sex trafficked in another country, and she said that the hurt that stayed with her more wasn't the hurt that her traffickers caused, but the hurt of knowing that so many people across the world knew what was happening to her and didn't do anything about it. And so I think about that in times like this, specifically in my role with Students Demand Action, of thinking about all of the gun violence survivors and victims who have been lost, and just knowing that there's so many people who care and that we cry when we see these things on the news, and then because we ourselves maybe have not had a gun pointed at us, that we just don't make it a priority in our day.
That's the privilege that I think that Nick is talking about. And I think he's right. I think if you're any age in this country and you feel like politics doesn't really impact your day-to-day life, you're less likely to vote, and that's probably a place of privilege. Because politics obviously impacts all of us. I mean, and that's why I mentioned climate at the top. If that's the only issue you think about, well, that impacts all of us in our future. Though, let me read an email that just came in, and I want to encourage people to call the program, especially if you're under the age of 30. Are you voting? Are you not voting? And if you're not voting, will you tell us why? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The email, I think, is texted, and that shows how old I am because I don't know the name. But here it is. I'm a millennial. I will not be voting. D's and R's are two sides of the same coin, and climate change is irreversible anyway. Iman, you flinched a little. I'll start with you. What did you make of that, Iman?
I'm incredibly disappointed to hear that a day before the election, to be quite honest. But I think everyone has a right to decide on what they want to do. I just think that I've heard this argument before, you know, whether or not you don't necessarily believe in the bipartisanship and associate yourself with either the Democrats or the Republicans. I think you can, number one, write in a candidate if you don't think that there's anybody on that ballot that you necessarily agree with. And what have you actually been doing throughout this whole campaign process to make sure that it didn't necessarily have to go down the route of only being between Democrats and Republicans? And I don't necessarily agree with that position on climate change. Actually, I don't agree with it at all. And that is not, that's me just as an individual. I think it's very harmful to see arguments like that still proposed. But I mean, hopefully we can get into this later into the program, but why exactly it's so important for everybody to vote, but I don't want to go into that right now.
If I can piggyback off of that, just a quote that Barack Obama said a few years ago, I think understanding that we're not a country of red states or blue states, we are the United States, and then we have to start looking forward to unity and start looking forward to how do we align ourselves with candidates who may push the personal views that we have. I think all of our views are shaped by our environment and where we come from. So when you take those views and move forward with them, what is that candidate, whether or not you may not agree with them wholeheartedly, 100%, but you do know that some of the views that you have in mind is some of the views that the candidate can progress for you. So I think if we start to talk about unity and start to talk about how can you align yourself and push and hold our elected officials accountable, then we can start to talk about
all right, that issue. Audrey Sample, do you have anything to say to the emailer who says Republicans and Democrats are two sides of the same coin?
I agree with both of them that I just can't, and maybe it's the, like, the shame that my history professor father instilled in me about, like, needing to vote. Maybe it's just that, like, subconscious thing. But I just cannot imagine not voting on Election Day, even if it was, like, for my grandma or some random person. Like, for me, it's just, I just cannot imagine accepting reality. Like, it's, like, just accepting that injustice is always going to prevail. Like, by voting, you're saying that you have hope in humanity and that you have hope that there could be a better day, even if you're not voting for someone who's on the ballot.
Okay, Nick.
Let me just break this weird email down or text. First off, two sides of a coin are different sides. You have heads or you have tails. So that I don't understand that little analogy there.
Go ahead, keep going.
But first of all, the fact that D's and R's are the same thing, I don't understand that either. We live in a time where the two sides are polar opposites. They are lividly partisan. So the fact that they could possibly be the same thing is mind-boggling to me. And as far as climate change goes, so many people don't even believe scientists about climate change, and yet this irreversible climate change concept that some people genuinely believe in just don't care anymore because of that defeatism, I guess, scientists don't say that either. And that's just as much science denial as saying it's not real at all.
It's a powerful response from Nick. Thank you for that. We'll get to your calls in a moment here. And young voters especially, email the program, connections@wxxi.org, or call us at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Are you voting? Well, taking a look at the Washington Post story this morning, will there be a youth wave? Early voting points to yes. The Harvard Institute of Politics poll finds of voters age 18 to 29, how many report they are definitely voting in this election? 40%. That's a big number for that age group. I mean, that sounds low to a lot of people. But here's another metric for you. Catalyst compared youth voting in the midterm 2014, so 4 years ago. Youth turnout rates in the midterm early voter up by 125%. Eye-popping and historically high figures, according to strategists on both the left and right. So the numbers are really high. Iman, you look like you wanted to respond to that number of 40% saying they're definitely going to vote tomorrow.
No,
have voted already.
No, I think that's a great number to hear. I mean, for somebody who's watched these statistics kind of unfold, mm-hmm. especially since this administration, I think that's a really high number, especially in a midterm election. I think that's great. I think if we can even see more, I don't know if we can do that. If we can even meet that 40%, that would be amazing. But I think I just wanted to talk about something really quick regarding the whole bipartisanship and whether I think we need to really understand that this is no longer about political party. This is about the issues and what has actually been happening. We have seen nearly every single person of any marginalized community being attacked. And we've felt that. We felt that in our community. We felt that nationally. We see it. We see the attacks here from the LGBTQ community to the, me as a Muslim. I felt it as someone from the like Arab, Middle Eastern, South Asian community. I've seen how my Black brothers and sisters are like also disappointed by everything that's been going on, by the injustices both by police departments that, mm-hmm. you know, where policies are being mandated, not necessarily only through federal policy, but also through state policies and local policies. You know, this stuff is really hitting home right now. Nearly everything that our president has said, left and right, has impacted us even just in our Rochester community alone. Mm-hmm. And so I really, really would hope that people think back, not necessarily about what party they associate with, but more so with what issues are important to you. And if you decide not to vote, you're abstaining from taking and participating and helping a community that's already been marginalized for so long, way for decades before this president ever was elected. And you're deciding that this is not important enough to you to step up and try. That's the one thing that you can do, is try. And we may not necessarily see change happening immediately afterwards, but it's so important to practice that. And then to also start to think about, you know, we don't necessarily have to conform to politics as usual, right? Like, we don't have to give in to these political parties. We don't have to give in to a certain candidate specifically as to everything that they say. We are the ones who should be demanding what we're seeing happening on these legislative floors after these people elected. We are the ones who should be setting these priorities for them.
So it doesn't end tomorrow?
Absolutely not. No, there's a whole process of accountability. There's a whole process of legislative records we need to follow along with these people who get elected, regardless of where they stand on what side of the aisle. And I think that's our duty to make sure we follow through with it.
just because someone associates with one party over the other does not mean that we can trust somebody more than the other. We have to hold them accountable. We have to set these priorities. We have to get these pieces of legislation passed. The fact that there are certain protections in place, like, you know, we haven't been able to pass GENDA in New York State in a super long time. There's pieces of legislation that are there to protect immigrant families, to do what we can as a state to protect those families, and we aren't doing that. You know, and it's, I think people just really need to understand that this is in our hands. It's not in anyone else's hands. It's not in Congress's hands. It's in our hands.
But let me read an email from a black woman who is not voting and wants our panel to understand why. Jay writes the following. Public officials are limited by the state in regards to what they can and cannot do regarding policy changes and such. The state is built on an anti-black foundation, making anti-black subjection and oppression central to its functioning. I don't believe reformism or using the state to achieve harm reduction is a solid long-term strategy for achieving liberation. So I don't plan on voting because I genuinely don't believe we should mobilize mass numbers of people in that way, and we shouldn't depend on the state to do what we want them to do.
I mean, I would agree, but to a certain extent, I would disagree. As a young black male, for hundreds of years, our ancestors fought to get the right to vote. And the fact that you say that you don't want to continue to put on the fight to make sure that the issues and the things that are happening in your community can be heard. And it goes back to something that I wrote down earlier, is that when we as individuals check out of politics, check out of elections, and don't continue to hold individuals accountable, we allow for others who we may not align our views with to check in, to fill that void. So meaning that if we're not participating in our elections as black people in America, if we're not participating and if we're not vocalizing our issues and holding our elected officials accountable from a local level, from school board all the way up to the president, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. And it may not take us a month, but it may not take us, it may not happen in the next election. But if you continue to persevere through some of the issues that you find to be important, then I think you see change.
Okay. And Mom, what would you say to Jay?
I mean, again, I'm not here to like force anybody to feel a certain way about the process. All I could do is try to reiterate. Plus, I cannot speak to her experiences and what she's felt as a black woman. I can't mm-hmm. do that. You know, and I think one of the things is I've heard that from people in the black community specifically, is that they don't trust the government to do enough for them. And I think it's because historically the government hasn't done enough for them, which is why, you know, I was mentioning earlier, but it doesn't stop and end at voting. Mm-hmm. I think voting is a great opportunity for those who are especially young enough, if they haven't felt like they are a part of this level of activism that's been going on, especially in this administration, to ever participate. Voting is a great way to start, but I don't think it ends everything, right? It's not going to resolve everything. All you're doing is electing new people, hopefully, into these positions that could helpfully promote the issues that are so important to us, and to break down the institutions and to break down the systemic racism and inequity that exists mm-hmm. around the state, but also nationally, that's continues to allow this woman to feel the way she is. And for right now, we haven't done a good job at making sure that we're creating these most equitable spaces and making sure that everybody has the right, you know, the access to opportunity, whether it's economic opportunity, if it's you know, mm-hmm. if it's I guess it's we're still far behind in that for as progressive, quote unquote, mm-hmm. of a state as we call ourselves. We still haven't done enough for the most marginalized. And so, again, I respect her opinion. And especially as a black woman, I don't know what that feels like to feel that sort of attack, especially by a government that you're supposed to trust. And when you know that the government isn't doing enough for you, of course you're going to feel like that way to some extent. I felt that way to some extent, you know, when I had after 9/11 as a Muslim woman, I was like, oh, my gosh, here I am, you know, really interested as a young person. I was in fourth grade when 9/11 happened, and I was so interested. I used 9/11 as a way to start to ask myself, what can I do to change the perceptions of Muslims in America? And I decided I'm going to become a part of the political process. It drove my parents crazy, and they were terrified of it. But I still pushed along with it to the point that I realized exactly what you were just saying, is if I don't speak up for myself, just for myself, then someone else speaks up for me, because there are plenty mm-hmm. of people who want that power and ego. And there are people who are already doing that for all of us. And I think we can break down that system, and we can make sure that we have a more equitable state, you know, equitable policies in place for every community member.
All right, on the phone, Norman in Rochester first. Go ahead, Norman.
Yes. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
My comment is basically along the lines of, if you don't vote, regardless of your background, then you are abdicating your right, if you will, to have to criticize or the existing political establishment, because through your right to vote is how you participate in making sure that those politicians in office are the ones that you as an individual want them to be. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay. Norman, thank you. Audrey Sample, I'll start with you.
Can you just clarify? So he was saying that if you don't vote, you can't complain?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, my dad loves voting and preaches voting and says the same thing, that if you, you know, he tells his students in his classes that if you don't vote, you don't get to complain. You know, and I may say that flippantly sometimes, but I mean, you're still allowed to be upset about injustices even if you don't vote. Like, that's not, I get it, but also I don't know how productive that is to say, and I don't think that a lot of people change their minds or their habits by being shamed.
Okay, Nick?
Yes. what I would say is exactly that, but more along the lines of, I know this is just a midterm year and the youth vote is more party to, you know, every 4 years presidential election, that's what gets the attention. But even between the midterm years, there's also other elections.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have a complaint, like even little ones, like I'm sick of my town having potholes. Those people are elected too. Every year they are elected. Special elections, your sheriff, your county legislature, all of these people are voting. So if you have all these little complaints as well as the big complaints, you have a say in every single one of those races. And I wish there were more outlets to get information about the. I mean, it's hard to get information on those people when it's on that level, but it is possible. And when it's that small of a race, you can meet them and talk to them yourself half the time. So why don't you?
So, Nick, as much as I'm agreeing with almost everything you just said, the one thing I'm going to disagree with is, and this isn't like a when I was your age, but when I was your age, there was no internet to even get information on the local town council. And so it can be hard. At times it can be disappointing because you look at races and you'll say, can you put more information about yourself out there? You know, sometimes you feel like the issues and the bios are very vague, but at least it's there. And you can do the work. It can be done.
Right.
Is that fair?
I would add an addendum. I didn't mean necessarily the internet, because you're right. Before even coming here, I went on to the websites of some of the people running in the area, and you look at their issues and it's like, corruption, I am against it. And you're like, yeah, great, thanks.
Exactly.
That's not really what I mean. I mean specifically you can go and find information.
No,
and
you.
When it is local, my state legislature, the woman running, lives in my town. I know where she lives. Her big van with her face plastered on, it's like down the street. You can find these people, not on their, I don't recommend knocking on their door. I don't mean that. But you can find information at your town hall. Ask people. People know
Absolutely.
Other people. It's not that difficult.
Absolutely. Iman, you looked like you wanted to jump in for a second there.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the rhetoric that people use, especially electeds that they use. It's really interesting, but I think it's all based on who are their voters and who turns out, and how can I speak to them in a way that actually encourages them to turn on vote. And I think this is one of the years, I haven't seen it happen with every person who was running, but I think it's really interesting to see that with more involvement coming from younger people, how will that language and rhetoric change between now and even the next year? Because next year we have a lot more local, like even way more local, like countywide and citywide elections coming up. And I think it's really important to start to see that. How does it change? Do they look at us like, I'm 26, I'm not as young as everybody else here, but you know, maybe not me, but everybody else. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see, are we important enough to them for them to change their rhetoric up in a way that's actually going to pertain to what we feel as a priority? Because right now it's all about corruption and like taxes. But I have seen more of like, you know, social justice stances, which I think is crucial right now, because that is what's really important to us. And I've noticed that, but again, not with everybody, but hopefully it's a shift we start to see in the next few years.
Well, a couple of comments here. Dave on Twitter says, I'm actually thinking you aren't going far enough asking them to vote. That's a low bar. Go get involved in a campaign or a party or a politically oriented group that works to get people elected and policies enacted. But yeah, voting is the minimum. That's from Dave. And Sarah writes to us and says, Evan, lots of people under the age 30 listen to your show. Almost none of them aren't voting. I don't know. That's fair. It's kind of a nice comment about the listenership of this show, Sarah. But listen, we're here to listen. If you are not voting tomorrow, and that's by choice, you don't care or you don't think it matters, etc., this group of folks wants to hear from you, and they'd love to talk to you about that. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Connections@WXXI.org is the email. I'm also curious to know how you approach your peers of the same age. What do they say when you talk to them? Let me read a couple of comments that came in. New York Magazine profiled a dozen people under the age of 30 who are not voting, and why? And I think that here's two very specific arguments. First, Tim, 27 years old from Austin, Texas, tells New York Magazine the following. Quote, I have ADHD, and it makes it hard for me to do certain tasks where the payoff is far off in the future or abstract. I don't find it intrinsically motivational. The amount of work, logically, isn't that much. Fill out a form, mail it, or go to a specific place on a specific day. But those kinds of tasks can be hard for me to do if I'm just not enthusiastic about it. That's kind of a problem with social attitudes around, you know, it's your civic duty to vote. I once told a coworker I didn't vote, and she said to me, that's really irresponsible, in this judgmental voice. Well, you can't build a policy around calling people irresponsible. You need to encourage people to feel enthusiastic and engaged. That's from Tim. Nick has an eye tick. What's going on over
there? Well, I would say I understand. I'm on the spectrum. I get that sometimes things outside of your control can complicate your decision-making, okay, your ability to be in that position to make a decision. I can't speak to ADHD, what specifically would be the issues for you, but I can say there are people that can help you. You can always mail in a ballot and take your time with it. I would say that there are enough ways that you can try and figure out what works for you, I guess, like I have to. I remember one time I think it was last year, I went into the actual booth, and I don't like doing it publicly because you have to make all those decisions and sometimes you don't recognize all the names, and I didn't. So I wrote in my father's name for almost every single one, and he was not thrilled. And it wasn't the greatest decision, but I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what any of this stuff is. I didn't even know what a comptroller was when I was a kid. So I understand, but there are ways.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Jamal, would you tell a coworker, a student peer, a friend, a cousin, anybody in your life who's your age, would you tell them you didn't vote, that's irresponsible? How do you approach it if they tell you, look, I'm not voting?
I think it's three-tier for me. It's one, when you hear things like that, it's first trying to get people to care about it, right? And it's trying to get people to care about the issues that they see in their community. It's trying to get people to care about the political spectrum, but also trying to get people to care about that their involvement matters. And then it's two, is educate. So once you get people to care about these issues, how do you educate them on being activists in these issues? How do you educate them on voting? What are the best ways? And to Nick's point, I think we do lack. Many states don't have curbside voting, which is a problem. I think we do lack with states and governments not making it accessible to vote.
Registration.
Like,
absolutely.
Absentee ballots. So it's a lot of ways. But it's one, care. Two, educate. And three, action. So I think once you get people to care and then you teach them is helping them create that action. So.
Okay. I'm curious to know if Iman and Audrey can hold back when they have people your age who are telling you they're not voting. Are you really kind and patient about it, or do you unleash a little?
I'll say as an example of my personality, that my best friend, it was sort of like a coming out experience when she told me she wasn't registered to vote, that it was like a sit down conversation. And like,
she literally told you, like, you have to sit down, I have to tell you.
No,
something.
I mean, we were already sitting down, but it really, like, she kept seeming like she had something to tell me. And eventually, I don't know if I should say her name, but eventually I was like, insert name here. Like, then eventually I realized, I was like, are you not registered to vote? And she was like, yes, I've been wanting to tell you for months. I just didn't know how you would react. But then we got her registered to vote in minutes and like, it was fine. So I guess that I find that with my friends, it's not so much that they don't want to vote or that they don't want to register to vote. It's that I think that the rhetoric of it being complicated makes them think that it's complicated. Mm-hmm. But if someone can sit down with them and walk them through the process, they realize that maybe it takes longer than they want, but it's simple to an extent for a lot of people. And since I know certain things about, you know, like gun violence as it relates to New York State and different things, that if I'm able to say, you know, a red flag law could have prevented Parkland or things like that, then they go, you know, oh, there's like statewide things that can be done that could that could prevent these tragedies that give them so much daily anxiety.
Okay. Iman?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I do, especially through the New York Civil Liberties Union, nearly like all year throughout the year, regardless of an election or not, is generally going in to educate people and kind of on what issues pertain to their own community. So, like, I've spent a lot of time going into the immigrant community. I'm going into the African-American community, you know, Latino community, and talking to them about, hey, these issues are at stake that are going to really impact your community, and break it down for people in a way, because those who are directly impacted are generally, especially if it's an incredibly significant issue, don't have the time to even think about how or where this issue is actually popping up from systemically. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that, you know, just going in and educating people on what their rights are surrounding this, one of them being voting, you know, voting people out if they're not necessarily supportive of certain policies for their own community and whatnot. I guess I got used to the fact that, number one, people aren't aware of what their rights are surrounding that, like citizen or non-citizen or whatever you may be, ex-felon, doesn't matter. Like, there's a lot of confusion around the voting system. And I think misinformation has been spread purposefully. I think it's intentional in some cases. And so it's really important to go in and try to break that down for certain people. I mean, of course, sometimes you can't engage people enough to a certain extent to help them and encourage them to vote in time. So I've been a little more lenient towards people who say they haven't voted. I think, though, for even my own friends and family, that, you know, although I'm incredibly someone who's so politically, you know, both, I've been politically active prior to joining the NYCLU, as well as being with the NYCLU and being more issue-oriented, we're not a partisan organization, but you do have to understand the political climate in order to understand what sorts of issues need to be, you know, are at stake and what you can actually push forth. But I think it's really important to try to break down the system in a way that's actually easy to comprehend for people who may not necessarily look at it every single day. And sometimes I forget, because I have a lot of friends who are activists. And I think, you know, sometimes we're always so enraged. We've been really enraged these last 2 years that I forget that there's a community of people sometimes outside of that that literally have no idea that these issues are even at stake. So.
All right. And let me get back to your phone calls. Ethan and Brian, I'm going to come to you in a second. Dave follows up on Twitter to say, by the way, I'm in my late 40s, and I'm not sure I know what a comptroller is now. So, Nick, solidarity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Let me get Ethan and Brighton. Go ahead, Ethan.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call again. How are you guys?
Sure. Good? Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm feeling kind of old today, actually, even though I'm only a year or two outside of technically being a millennial. But I've never missed an election in my life, even when I was your panel's age and moving around a lot. And I don't really know where it got lost. But I have a couple quick points, or why, you know, people only half a generation younger than me are not interested and don't feel the way about it I only remember feeling. But, you know, just to the people who they don't want to vote because they don't like either candidate. And I just have always, even simpler than, you know, you don't get to complain, is someone's going to fill these jobs. It's not like not ordering dessert if you don't like what's on the menu, you know, so you might as well have a say, is what I always think about it. And the other thing, I guess, back to why people don't vote, I always remember my parents taking me to vote. And I think, Evan, our sons are about the same age. I take my son to vote. I actually let him Scantron for the primary last year. And I think, you know, people our age vote, you know, the things we're looking for, a lot of us, are not going to be from the voters older than us or the voters younger than us. So I say, take your kids to vote, no matter how old they are, and, you know, get them thinking about it so it's already in their mind. I saw something the other day about young people are confused by the ballot. Well, I mean, I remember going to vote with my parents. So when I was 18, there was nothing confusing about it. Although I do miss our old Wizard of Oz election machines. I wish they would come back. And that's it. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Ethan, thank you. First of all, I'm with you. Take kids to vote. Let them see it. Not only let them see it, let them sort of normalize into that process. Get them excited about it. And think about them if you feel apathetic about why an election matters or not. Look any child square in the eyes and think real hard about that. I like that a lot, Ethan. Thank you. And on the subject of, you know, that Ethan brings up, sometimes people felt like, well, there's no good choices, you know, so why vote at all? That was similar to what Aaron, age 25, from Atlanta, Georgia, told New York Magazine. Let me read that and we'll get some panelists' thoughts before we get back to your phone calls. Aaron says, I look at it this way. That report just came out the other day about global warming, talking about how we've got, what, 12 years until 2030 for this radical change unlike any the world has ever seen. And the Hill newspaper just put out that article about how the DNC does not plan on making climate change a big part of their platform even still. I just do not understand why I would vote for a party that doesn't care about me in any way. Everyone on Twitter can be like, oh, well, we need the Democratic Party to do this or that. But have they watched the Democratic Party at any time during my lifetime? They have not done anything. They don't stand for anything. And I just don't see the point in any of this anymore. That's a 25-year-old who might be willing to vote Democrat, but he's not feeling like the party matters, and he's not going to vote. And he's saying, I don't like any of the candidates, Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian, otherwise. I'm not voting. I see nothing. Jamal, what would you say?
It goes back to the point I made earlier, where if you don't vote, right, and you don't align yourself, I mean, if you don't find a candidate who may align yourself with your views, then you just leave the space for others who do want their candidate to get in, win. So I think it just leaves a void, and it just doesn't shows a democracy. I think we are the people in power, not the people we elect. But the people who vote are the people in power, and we put the people in those positions to make decisions on our behalf. So even following, if you have a candidate that's in the office that where you see that you just don't like some of the work they're doing, how can you hold them accountable? How can you rally around some of the stuff that they're doing, or how can you rally around some of the stuff against what they're doing? So I think it's just holding people accountable. And that's what she was saying, is voting is not only one step, but accountability is also another major step to it.
So. Absolutely. That's such a good point, Jamal. I mean, again, this has been said so many times this hour, but for young voters who are cynical about what happens tomorrow, it's not just about tomorrow. And again, this isn't about one side or another as the host of this program, but whoever you want to see succeed or whatever issues matter, when you elect anyone, when they go to office, your work can continue in different ways. I mean, it was just a few weeks ago we had a conversation about 1990, the Capitol crawl and the disabilities community that put the pressure on Washington and politicians when, you know, the business community did not want to see Washington pass federal legislation, the Americans with Disabilities Act. It worked. It worked. But it took that work, not just on an election day, but to follow up with lawmakers, et cetera. Audrey, again, we come back to this whole there's no real choice. I don't like any of the sides. So whether it's Aaron from Atlanta, Georgia, whether it's Ethan hearing from people saying, well, there's no good choices, what comes to your mind with that?
This morning I read an opinion piece by Roxane Gay in the New York Times, and in it she said, quote, we have a responsibility to participate in this democracy, even when the politicians we vote for aren't ideal or perfect match. Voting isn't dating. We are not promised perfect candidates. Voting requires pragmatism and critical thinking and empathy, and now, more than ever, intelligent compromise. And that sums up my opinions pretty well.
Well, all of a sudden, I have a pile of emails to get through and a lot of phone calls. So let's just keep it going. Diana in Pittsford is 22 years old on the line next. Go ahead, Diana.
Hi. Glad to be here. I wanted to talk about my age group and the really big stigma against third-party voting. I hang around a lot of fresh 18-year-olds to young 22s to, you know, about that age. And I remember very, very clearly 2 years ago when the president and a lot of other people got elected, the first thing people started yelling about was, how dare you vote third party? And I'm seeing that a lot on social media. People are yelling not about you should vote this party, but they are saying if you vote third party, you are the worst of the worst. As somebody who is thinking about voting one or two third parties, I'm pretty scared about what that would mean for my ideals if I really am throwing away my vote or if I am pursuing what I wish the change I wish to see.
Diana, thanks for the phone call. Jamal, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say you're throwing away your vote. You're practicing your democracy. Yeah. You're utilizing the power that you have, and you're voicing your opinion with your vote. And it goes further than that. So if your candidate isn't the candidate that came out on top, but make sure your views is the views that came out on top. So, again, if you don't like the people in office, vote them out next time. If you don't like the people in office, I'm sorry, protest. But just find ways to put yourself in spaces to where the views that you were pushing for continue to be pushed for no matter who's in office. So.
Okay. Diana, hang there for a bit here. Anything else the panel wants to add there?
Sure. I have yet to vote a main party for governor thus far. This year I'll be voting for Stephanie Miner because I have not been shy about my distaste for Cuomo. It is possible to use your third party vote as means to put your own beliefs out, if for no other reason than to show people I am further to the left than you. I want you to come my way. Mm-hmm. And that's still just as valuable. I don't want to relitigate 2016 because there's a lot of hurt feelings there. But every time you vote, that is just as valid, I would say, as any other party. And I know I was on here last time because I specifically am an independent, so maybe I'm biased. But I see no issue with that personally.
Diana, what I don't want to do from the perspective of the host chair and an older white man is sort of mansplain down to you. But let me just give you from my perspective as a talk show host. I think the questions you're raising are really valid and interesting. And I think the notion of third party voting is a beautiful and important thing in this country. I think that there are going to be more nuanced discussions to be had when races are really close, when things are really tight, when you feel like as a block, what would it mean if we voted Green instead of Democrat or Libertarian instead of Republican, which is a really ugly binary and the Libertarians are probably cringing at. But anyway, I think you take the point.
Yes, exactly.
I know. And it doesn't quite work on that kind of a scale. And that's important because nuance is important. And I know we're losing nuance. But I think participating in any way is valuable. And I think Nick makes a really great point. Just what your vote says to do. The Working Families Party does not choose, generally speaking, to run their own candidates. They try to reform the Democratic Party from within and move them leftward from within. The Green Party doesn't. They've created their own party because they're dissatisfied with the left and they want to see more progressive change. All of that's valid. All of that's healthy. I think the debate's healthy. The conversation's healthy. And if you're there showing up tomorrow, it's healthy. That's from my perspective.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I definitely agree.
And I'm really glad you called the program, and I hope you do it again. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Diana. Anything else anybody want to grab before we go on to the next call?
Just, yeah, you're not throwing away your vote. Throwing away your vote would be not voting. You're voting. You're not throwing it away. So I hope that, you know, even if you're voting third party or if you're voting for your grandma or whatever, that you still go and that you make that stance to say there's hope for a better tomorrow.
And I think that number that comes out when the election results comes out mean a lot. Whether it's a losing candidate, the amount of people that you see that rally behind that candidate shows some importance to it. I think that number is kind of what you were saying. That number is where you see like as many people out here who align themselves with the same views as you. So it's mobilizing with those people as well. So
I'm reading an email from Chris who says, not an under 30 voter, but says everyone is cynical and feels politicians don't represent them in just about every possible way. It's not just the young. Get involved, minimally defined as voting once in a while, or shut up. Okay, that's from Chris. And here is from Luke on the subject of why not voting. Luke says, I've got to go to work tomorrow to get stuff done. Actions speak louder than words. And he compares voting to a restaurant. He says, if you don't like a restaurant, don't go there. Voting or not voting for that restaurant isn't going to change anything, but not giving them your money will. Telling people how to live their life is about as bad as it gets. I don't tell people how to live their lives, so don't tell me or guilt me into how to live mine. From Luke.
All right, Luke. Who wants to take a stab?
Luke, quiet in the room.
No, I would say this to Luke. So I think it goes back to what we all been saying, is voicing your opinion. But going to work, I think every employer should allow their employee to get paid time off to go vote.
Legally, you do have the right to go.
Yep, exactly.
I just want to say, you can leave work for about 2 hours and it should be on paid time.
Right.
Just FYI. Sorry.
That's important though, because there's still a lot of people, number one, don't know that, or I suspect, and I don't want to speak out of school, employers who are not as cool about that as they need to be.
Right.
It's election day. Talk to your employer. You've got the right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair, Amanda? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Nick, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Well, again, with these weird and like comparisons they're making, voting is not a restaurant. It's nothing like a restaurant. Restaurants have to make a profit. When two people are, or three or four, however many people are running for an office, all they need is one more than the other person. Well, not in every case, but usually all they need is just more votes than another person to win, mm-hmm. not a profit of votes. They're just not comparable. The restaurant will care if they don't make money. Whoever is running in this race is not going to care if you specifically didn't vote. In fact, being told that your vote doesn't matter, that's the way to make your voice heard by not saying anything at all, which is contradictory, that is just another way that they get you to not vote.
Well, Brian in Spencerport wants to jump in on the money being spent to convince people not to vote. Go ahead, Brian. What do you mean?
There are multiple organizations funded by right-wing billionaires. Peterson Foundation is one of them, who spent over $400 million over the last 10 years to convince people like your emailers or callers that they shouldn't vote, that it really doesn't matter. And, you know, I mean, even the nice, polite Republican radio station, NPR, has the Koch brothers on the board, and your stories or your national news is so misleading so many times that people... Let me just add this. If you don't vote for a third party... Now, I'm going to have to vote for Cuomo, but I would not vote for him on the Democratic line. I would vote for him on the Working Party, Family Party line, because if these third parties don't get, I believe in New York State, 50,000 voters... to pull their lever or to check off their box, they lose their line mm-hmm. completely on the ballot.
Well, Brian, thank you. And look, I think it's totally fair if you want to analyze who's on what board. I think that's totally fair, ours or otherwise. And if you're concerned about money being spent to convince young people not to vote, I think that is also fair. And that's part of the reason that these airwaves are being used in this way today. Everyone here thinks it does matter very, very much. But Mark in Rochester has a comment about shaming people. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, I just don't believe in shaming people. It never works. It doesn't really make any difference. I feel, I myself, I'm not voting because it does not impact my daily life, does not impact those around me. I feel that both sides are pretty much the same, as one, I think one caller, someone mentioned before. Same point, different faces. The rhetoric has just become so polarizing that it's hard to decide. It's hard to figure out what's right, what's wrong. And to get involved in politics is a full-time job. Most people are just focusing on their life and trying to survive through the waves. I realize, at minimum, I have 8 years, things change. 8 years ago, it was a different story. The next 8 years after this might be a different story and a different struggle. But I don't feel it's necessary to shame someone. I think voting was, those that fought for voting was giving the people the choice. You have the choice to vote or
okay.
not.
So Mark, hold on for 1 second. I know Aman wants to jump in.
I just want to say that nobody in this discussion has shamed anybody for not voting. We've all been talking about why we think it's important to vote, but no one has shamed anybody. And we've even talked about our own opinions about it. I do just want to say I completely 100% disagree with your comment about it not that politics has nothing to do with your own life, when in reality, every decision made in the political institution impacts everyone's lives, from the houses that we live in, from the taxes that we pay, to the development in our own cities. Those are all decisions that are being made by politicians.
Healthcare.
There's healthcare, you know, who has access to what rights, even in certain situations, the way the law is interpreted, all of that impacts our daily lives. Even if you don't necessarily see it and don't know how it is, all these decisions are being made by politicians. There's no way that your life is not impacted by what's happening.
To that point, I mean, even to get as small as to opening a business, you got to go to the government to do that. So there's many different ways where politics influence the everyday life of people. Even the car you buy, it's an influence from politicians. So.
And I guess that for myself, I would just say that, I also don't want to ignore the fact that it also is about the big issues, and that voting does, I don't know, I guess like thinking for myself, like as a survivor of gun violence, that I can't imagine walking down the street and feeling safe. So I can't imagine like having the privilege to just not care about politics and think that it doesn't influence your daily life because, like, injustice doesn't also influence your daily life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of emails I could have read for another hour or so from people who will be showing up. Carolyn says, I'm discouraged by how many folks are calling and writing in to say they're not voting. I'm 29. I mailed in my absentee ballot last month. Voting is truly the least we can do, and I can't imagine not wanting to exercise that right. From Carolyn. Todd writes to us and says, the youth of this country can do something about their perceived lack of power and a lack of voice in the system. They simply have to become engaged. And Todd says, take that voice. Vote. And just so many others here. I'll read Andrea's real quickly. She says, this topic is so important to me. I had to email. As a daughter of two Brazilian immigrants, I always saw voting as incredibly important. I watched for most of my life. My parents worked so hard for their citizenship and their right to vote. The first time they got the chance to vote in their mid-40s was one of the most memorable days. I remember how much voting to them was a culmination of their efforts as immigrants. And now, after the recent Brazilian election, I realize how lucky I am to be born in the United States. Voting is mandatory in Brazil, and I honestly can't imagine how I would react if I were a young Brazilian liberal forced to choose between such terrible candidates. I think sometimes Americans don't realize how their voting and system is in such a better place than other countries. To me, that makes me feel like my vote really does matter here. That's from Andrea. So I want to thank all of our guests for being here, sharing their perspectives. They're going to be voting tomorrow, if they haven't already, but they will be voting there. Will you? Jamal Holtz, Iman Abed, Nick Nebinger, Audrey Sample, thank you all for being here, sharing your perspectives. And as Iman said, not shaming, listening, but yeah, trying to convince you to be there. They want you to be there if you're 18 to 29 or 18 to 129 or older. Thanks to all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Tomorrow is Election Day. You have every right to vote if you are registered, and your employer should know that. Important reminder from Iman and the entire team here. I will talk to you tomorrow, and I hope you're listening, and we will chat a lot more about what's going on here and across the country here on this program and the Tomorrow Night with special live election coverage.